Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. And we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in. Well, I'm excited for this hour because it's been ages since we've had our good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley of Focus on the Family on the show. Typically, we get him on about two Wednesdays a month. But with my travel season and his travel season, we've kind of missed each other. There's been just enough time that's passed that you can be assured that there's probably three incidents and one story that he has to tell. So I can't wait to get him on the show. We're going to get him on in just a moment. We're going to talk about something kind of interesting. This is something Greg wanted to talk about. It's always interesting how God starts to download a concept to him, and it applies to so many. I just love that when that happens. But this is what he wants to talk about today. What happens when contempt creeps its way into marriage? What's the ripple effect? How does that in long-term affect the marriage? And what can we do to not only eradicate it from our marriage, but guard against it? Why is contempt such a dangerous parasite, poison in marriage? We'll talk about that in just a moment. A couple quick announcements. I'm so excited. This is our fourth annual Faith Radio Writers Contest, and it is in full swing. We're taking submissions till about the 22nd of this month, which means you've got some time here, but not a lot. So you need the information on our website to give you kind of the submission guidelines, the word count. You can write in the fiction track or the nonfiction track. But here's the thing. There's a handful of you top vote getters that will get to come to our green room at the station here and have a luncheon and face-to-face meetings with editors from Bethany House Publishers. That is a fantastic opportunity. That usually doesn't happen unless you pay a high tuition to go to a writer's conference. So take advantage of this opportunity. We'd love for you to take part. If you're afraid and if fear is the only thing standing in your way, put the fear under your feet and do it anyway. At least go and take the first step. Get on our website. Find out the submission guidelines and then do it. All right. Also, the National Association of Evangelicals is leading this initiative to get 1 million Christians praying on Sunday, July 10th, praying for our nation, praying for revival, praying for a national reset. And if you want more information, you want to sign up your life group or your church to participate, go to their website, nae.net. We are asking God for revival. We're desperate for revival. Imagine if 1 million of us were praying on July 10th. It's possible. Again, go to nae.net. And then finally, a special welcome to our new family friends listening on Faith 1290 in Hartford, Connecticut. So blessed to do this journey with you. Thanks so much for listening. Okay, so we've got Dr. Greg Smalley on. Like I said, we try to get him on a couple times a month. Let me tell you about him. He serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. His books include The DNA of Relationships and The Wholehearted Marriage and a whole stack of other books he's written. He and his wife, Erin, have three daughters, Taylor, Murphy, and Annie, and a son, Garrison. He's got an influencer page up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dear Dr. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's great to be on with you. Finally, it's been so
long.
Yeah. I just thought you guys were tired of me.
Well, we were trying to not answer your calls, but we couldn't avoid you forever. So there you have it.
The beauty of social media.
Exactly.
I tracked you down.
He's like, I know you're there. You can't be dead. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. No, it's so good to have you. And I can't wait to hear about your three incidents and your one story because I know you have them. But let's start with scripture, bud. Do you have a verse that you can share with us?
I do. Today, I'd love to talk through 1 Samuel 16:7. It says, "For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And this verse so perfectly describes what we want to talk about, which is it's the what the Lord does is the opposite of contempt.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to get into contempt in a moment because I want an update from you. What's been going on in your world these days?
Well, lots and lots. But one thing in particular that was really, really cool is my oldest daughter, Taylor, who's now 22. She's a nurse in Northwest Arkansas. She's been dating a guy. This kid called me up on the phone and said, "Hey, can we talk?" And I went, "Whoa. Are you going to ask me what I think you're going to ask
me?"
And he goes, "Yeah, maybe."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, hey, how about this?" I said, "Instead of us talking about this over the phone, I said, Aaron can't go to a seminar that's coming up in a couple of weeks with me. I'm going to be there by myself. How about if you join and I'll pay for you to come out and we'll hang out and talk and you can sit through the seminar and decide if you want to be part of this family."
Brilliant.
That'll give you as much as you need to know.
Because you know you're going to be some of our content and speaking, right?
Exactly.
Are you ready? Okay. So he did it. And how was that? Was it awkward at all?
You know, so leading up to that, so like a couple of days before, I had texted him and just said, "Hey, by the way, I need to make sure that I talk to your parents. I need to know that they give their blessing before you and I can even talk." So I said, "Can I have your dad's cell phone number?" So
wow, Greg.
He texts me his dad's cell phone number. So I text this long kind of, "Hey, so sorry it's taking me this long to reach out. You've got an amazing son," and blah, blah, blah. And so I go through this whole thing that, you know, he wants to ask me for Taylor's hand. I can't do that until I know you give your blessing. Any concerns? I mean, just so I get this response back a couple hours later, and literally it says this. It says, "Hey, it's great to meet you." He goes, "But, you know, my son's dating several girls right now, and I'm not sure which one is Taylor. Would you send me a picture of her so I can make sure that I'm okay with her?"
No way.
And that's what I said. And so I thought, okay, so certainly there's going to be a quick, you know, "Hey, just kidding," and "ha, ha, ha, sure, I'd love to talk." Nothing. Like an hour and a half later, I get this text saying, "Hey, I was just joking.
Oh, my
I'm
goodness.
Not Caleb's father. This is a wrong number. Oh. I just wanted to have some fun with you."
Incident number one. Okay.
And so I text the guy back. I'm like, "That was awesome. I so respect that. Well played, buddy."
That's hilarious. Only you. Only
so
you. Okay.
We did talk. His dad gave me his blessing, no concerns about his son or my daughter. Hey, Susie, we had just an incredible time. And I've been working on a project at Focus of all the times. Just the timing of life is so cool. It's going to be an online assessment called Are You Ready to Propose? So it's just something for people who are thinking about popping the question. What do they need to know? And we can sort of help them think that through. Hmm. And so I was in this zone and I literally printed off the report that I've been working on. And he and I just went through it. And he's an amazing young man who loves the Lord, loves my daughter. Just we went through a ton of stuff because I started thinking, yeah, I should probably ask him some important questions. What should I ask him? And that's really when the stuff that I've been working on, God just used it, and I got to literally field test it. And so I had Taylor write him a letter giving him her blessing. I had Aaron write a letter, kind of her blessing to Caleb. And then Murphy, Garrison, and Annie each gave him a letter.
You're kidding.
And then, at the end of the time, I had prepared a long letter, and he got to read that on the flight home, to where I just kind of walked through what I see in him. And what was really cool, I mean, lots of things, but one of the things that was amazing, again, just timing. God is so awesome. How he shows up in just small ways just to remind us, "Hey, I'm here. I got this. Mm-hmm. I'm fighting there with you." I was cleaning out our basement and just throwing stuff away, just trying to purge. And I came across the box and I was basically just dumping stuff. And I see this little shoe box and threw it away. But then I thought, I should probably open it just to make sure it's nothing important. Because I was tired. You know when you're dumping stuff and you just reach that point where you're like, I don't want to see any of it. Throw it all away. Well, I opened it up And there were 30 letters that Taylor had written when she was 13 to her future husband.
No way.
Yeah, including
almost incident number two.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
Dad, I wrote a bunch of letters. Where are those?
Oh, my goodness.
Including, though, a list that she had, at 13, she had made a list, and it just said, my husband, .. and all these characteristics and things she was praying for. I didn't know any of this existed.
Wow.
And so I salvaged them all and told her, and she's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about those.
My.
And so I got to hand him all this cool stuff, and it was amazing. So,
okay, two questions, Greg.
Yeah.
One, anything he said as you went through the questionnaire surprised you, like stuff you're going to steal now and start teaching as your own? And then two, has he asked her yet?
Well, let me start with the easier one. He has not. Actually, this Taylor doesn't know this, but this weekend he is flying out, and he's going to, I think, do this in Colorado Springs and surprise her and bring her out a couple, maybe a month down the road. But he's coming out to sort of scout out. But it's really cool. He's like, hey, I want you guys to be involved, and so I'm going to come out. Let's find some cool places.
So you, me, 10,000 listeners. Only that. Let's just keep it between us, though. Okay.
Yeah. No social media, please.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness.
So, otherwise, boy, the thing that I love that he said is that he is we were talking at some point, he kind of made this statement. He goes, I want you to know that I will always love God more than I will ever love your daughter.
Wow. And, that's what you want to hear.
It was. Mm. And I said, can I hug you? Would that be awkward?
We're going to hug a lot.
We are. And we did.
Oh, I'm so happy.
He's just
for
a
you.
Neat kid. It was so fun when I walked him through Taylor's list that she'd made at 13. Hmm. And one of them was the best one. It said that you cannot be a farmer.
Or anything like Hank.
Yeah.
That was her kindergarten.
And it said he has to have a cool ethnicity.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of really good ones. Those were some of the funny ones.
Wow.
That were on there. And actually, he was adopted by an American couple from Vietnam.
My
and
goodness.
So he's
How is Annie feeling cool. about that, being adopted from China?
Yeah, she adores him and
wow.
just absolutely loves it. And what was so odd is long, long years before Taylor was ever even really, the first time she ever met this kid, some of her friends were friends with him, and they were coming through Colorado Springs, and they showed up, and so Caleb, who's Vietnamese, and her other friend, who I'm not sure her ethnicity is. She's Asian. They just, to be funny, walked down to Annie's room and just went and kind of walked in and woke her up, and they were like, hey, we're your real mom and dad.
Oh, my
We've
goodness.
Come to take you.
Oh, and, only and in I was, Smalley house.
I know. We were horrified, but I thought that was kind of funny, though, too.
Yeah.
So long before I knew that this was going to be my son-in-law,
he
impressed me with this.
That's humor. It. You got to invite the guy you texted to the wedding for no other reason than he fits with your people. I mean, he's one of your tribe. My goodness.
I don't know if I want this dude to show up, though.
Wow, talking to Dr. Greg Smalley. When we come back, we'll talk about the power of contempt, the ripple effect of it, and what to do about it in the context of our marriage. So good to get an update from our good friend Greg. More with Dr. Greg Smalley when we return. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our good buddy, Dr. Greg Smalley, of Focus on the Family. Like I said, we usually get him on every other Wednesday, but he's been traveling, I've been traveling. We're both on the home stretch of our spring travel season. So good to have him back. We're going to talk now about contempt in the context of marriage. Greg, how did this topic come up for you? It's always interesting to me when you set a topic for our conversation, you always have kind of a backstory about how it emerged for you and kind of got your attention.
Yeah, there's nothing major other than Usually Wednesdays would be a day that I'll just spend in front of the computer and just kind of doing some research, some reading, you know, looking for some new marriage topics to write article, whatever. It's just kind of a day to look at some content. And so as I was reading an article, I was reminded of one of the very best marriage researchers in our country is a guy named Dr. John Gottman up at the University of Washington. Just done amazing stuff. He has a thing he calls the Love Lab, and has just found some awesome insights about marriage. And I just saw the little line that I hadn't thought about in a long time. But basically, when he's looked back on his four decades of research, he says that contempt is the number one predictor of divorce. In other words, it's the single most significant indicator that a marriage is in trouble. And so when I saw that, Susie, I just went, man, you know what? We need to slow down and really think about this idea of contempt. If arguably the greatest marriage researcher of our day and time says that the number one predictor of divorce is contempt, it's probably something we should talk about.
You know, Greg, that really does connect with your closed heart, because that whole concept that you often talk about, because I think contempt happens in layers. But just for the sake of conversation, unpack what contempt is. Describe it for us.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of two things. One, on one hand, it's about superiority. In other words, you really through your words, your body language, your actions, you're communicating to your spouse that you are superior, that we're not equals, that I'm smarter than you, that I'm more sensitive to you, that I know what's best, that I'm okay, you're not okay, you're beneath me. It's just a way in which, like, for example, how that might literally show up is if, let's say that Aaron and I are engaged in a conversation and we let's say that we had been going through a really tough season, you know, just we're not doing well. I'm just saying hypothetically, because we're okay. So don't call her or text her. Saying,
so sorry, Aaron.
You yeah. Greg
what did that pudding head do now?
So let's say that as she's talking, as she's sharing maybe how she's feeling or what she's thinking or her perspective of the issue, that I'm rolling my eyes. I'm giving that sort of sarcastic, you know, what, right, whatever. You know, I'm snickering at her. I'm mimicking her. You know, I'm mocking her. I mean, those are the kinds of things that communicate that you're not okay. I'm okay.
I'm
and
fine.
By the way, I'm
you're
smarter.
Not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens, because I don't think there's a person out there that would ever go, oh yeah, there's contempt in my marriage.
Let me ask you this, because when I think of contempt, I think of that, but I also think of kind of an accumulated, almost a fossilized grudge, where you've allowed layer upon layer upon layer of just attitude and unforgiveness to the point that you get to that place of superiority. And oftentimes you see it in a way a spouse will correct their spouse in an exposing way in front of other people. Like, it wasn't five, it was four, idiot. Yeah. You know what I mean? But underneath it, it feels like this fossilized attitude that's not been dealt with. What do you say?
Absolutely. Because it's that mixture of superiority, arrogance. There's also, though, a piece of it that involves disgust. And it's just like you're saying, layer upon layer, day after day, week after week, year after year, maybe, of just us going through these really hard times, you just reach a point to where, man, your spouse may disgust you, the way they treat you, the messages, how you handle conflict, all of that. It just, you hate it. You're sickened by them. You get into these discussions and you don't want anything to do with them. And that's when you'll say things like, I just don't love him anymore. You know, I'm so tired of her. She just, man, she just makes me sick in these moments. I mean, that, I think all of that we would classify as contempt. And I tell you, I've watched it happen in my own marriage. I mean, those within probably 4 years of Aaron and I being married, I absolutely believe that we were right, both of us, at that place where contempt had completely invaded our marriage.
When you think about, you've often say that people don't fall out of love. For one, they think themselves out of love. They let their mind wander, which again is so connected to contempt. We've got about 3 minutes before our bottom of the hour break. I want you to connect, because if it's the one, number one indicator of divorce, if contempt is left undealt with, what's wrapped up in there other than superiority? Would you say unforgiveness, pride, lack of humility, any other things? It seems like a ball of yarn with a bunch of other stuff tangled in there. Any other things that maybe we wouldn't think of that are part of this contempt snarl?
Yeah, definitely, as you put it, you know, unforgiveness, arrogance, pride, you feel so unsafe within your relationship. The problem, I think, with contempt is that it just fosters in negative beliefs. And the problem with negative beliefs, so if I'm viewing Aaron with a real negative lens, see, throughout the day, I will only notice the things that she does that's consistent with whatever my beliefs are about her. So if contempt has invaded our marriage, it's poisoning our relationship, it's poisoning my mind, and now I start to see her in such a negative way that all of a sudden that sort of righteous indignation sets in, that I'll tell you, Susie, hey man, listen to what she did today. And what I'll do is I'll tell you about the things that I noticed, the things that hurt me, frustrated me, upset me, but what I won't tell you though is any of the things that she did that was good. And I guarantee you, both the bad and the good happen every day.
Indeed. You know, there's a proverb that's in Scripture that says, somebody's story always sounds right till you hear the other side. So there's times you'll hear from a spouse and you think, oh my goodness, you know, how do you stay in such a marriage? But then you see all the things that they're not seeing because they're busy building a case, right?
It's so true. And that's why I think if you're sitting there going, yeah, I wonder... Yeah, contempt. I wonder if that's really, has that invaded our marriage? Again, think of it when you guys are talking, is there, you know, are you mocking one another? Is there a lot of sarcasm? Is there hostile humor? In other words, where Aaron is more than likely the punchline, you know, of my harsh jokes, you know, name calling, mimicking, you know, eye rolling. Those things are indications that contempt is absolutely invaded.
And when we talk about, we're going to take a break here in a moment, but this kind of fossilized judgment, if you back out of it and you kind of soften the situation, fossilized judgment probably happened. And first, before that, it was frustration. Before that, it was anger. Then it was hurt. Then it was a broken heart. So at some point, the person felt vulnerable. And if they could have gotten to each other at that point and settled it, while things were still tender, it seems like it's doable. But if it kind of, they get railroaded, they get not listened to, they get blown off, suddenly it goes from hurt to anger to frustration to I hate you. I mean, that is what happens, isn't it, in marriage, if we don't deal in the moment when we're vulnerable and hurt?
Absolutely. And seeing that's going to usher in those negative beliefs. And,
wow.
And that's where contempt is cemented.
Okay, so we're going to talk about a little bit more about the ripple effect if we let this thing go unchecked, but also then how do we extract it from our marriage? How do we guard against it? More with Dr. Greg Smalley when we return. You're having a great day today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Really blessed to have our good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley of Focus on the Family, joining us today, talking about the issue of contempt. It's found to be one of the greatest indicators of divorce, that if you allow contempt to rule and reign, even just exist in your marriage, it's highly predictable that that eventually will lead to divorce. And I really would think that it's like a parasite, that it either gains strength or you starve it to death. And Greg, I saw this report recently, about a man who's been going into supermarkets with this syringe and injecting rat poison in food.
Yeah.
So scary. But isn't that just sort of the same contempt in marriage? It really is injecting poison into your marriage.
Absolutely. That's a great analogy. It's when we're mocking one another and having some real sarcastic humor and calling names and mimicking and eye rolling, that's like it spewing poison at our spouse. And I'm telling you, what it's doing is it's seeping then into the pores of our marriage. Mm. And over time, a marriage isn't going to last that's just riddled full of contempt, because it feels so unsafe. You know, no one wants to feel rejected and unwanted within a relationship. People just won't hang in there.
Well, you endure that long enough, your soul just withers, doesn't it?
It truly does. And part of the other problem is that if every time that Aaron and I are going to have a discussion or we have an interaction that feels contemptuous, that over time we're just going to stop working through problems. In a marriage that can't work through its issues and can't cultivate good experiences, it just won't last, because your heart will so harden. And that's mm-hmm. where Jesus said that Moses permitted you to divorce because of the hardness of your heart. We've got to fight back against contempt.
And that's really good. And I love that you kind of spoke to the other side, because the person on the receiving end of that contempt, I would imagine they can't hang in there forever, because it's going to have this sort of death effect on their own soul. And we've got an anonymous caller checking in from Lakeville with a question around this whole issue of contempt. And I want to make sure, let's do this, give a few minutes to calls. If you want to call in anonymously and ask Greg a question, we can stand with you. We'd love to do that. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Dear friend, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. My question involves my husband, who has settled into contempt without me knowing, has kind of played the role. And I was surprised by an I don't love you, I don't have feelings, just out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what can a spouse that doesn't feel that way, feels the exact opposite way, help that spouse either get out of that or help them see that it's not all about feeling?
Wow. God bless you, first of all. What do you say, Greg?
Yeah, it's a great question. Boy, I so wish that there was a magical answer that I could give that would be exactly what you need to do in that situation. Because the hard part is that, yeah, I can't make Aaron feel this or that. All I can do is try to figure out what can I do. What is my part that can help make this marriage feel safe? And you know, a lot of times we'll say that the hardest question, the difficult question, is how can I have a better marriage, or how can I change my spouse? The right question is what can I do to be a better husband? What can I do to be a better wife? And it just it feels like such a really, because it almost breeds a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness. If that's it, if I can't change how he feels or what he thinks, you know, all right. But I just want to be real, real clear. The cool part is I believe that as we really focus in on what can I be doing differently when I show up differently, that it does have a huge influence and makes a huge impact on our spouse and on our marriage. And so, again, where I would encourage you to really start to really pray this through and think this through is just, what am I doing to love? What am I doing to help build a marriage that feels like the safest place on earth, in spite of the fact that you might not get anything in return?
Greg, sorry. I was going to say, tell me if this would be helpful, but because she says he's turned on a dime, couldn't she say, before you check out, because this is such a sudden shift for me, can we sit down? And then have her, in a humble, non-defensive way, just say, help me understand. You often say that. Help me understand. When did you first notice this shift? Where she's just delving. She's not accusing. She's not trying to change him. But she's trying to get some information. Because don't you think sometimes when we start to dig deep and identify some of the things we're feeling, then he maybe will be less apt to say, you're completely the problem, where maybe there were some breakdowns and situations that he misread. I mean, what about just asking for an audience with him to say, before you make any drastic decisions based on the feelings you say you have, can we just have some conversation? If so, if you think that's a good idea, give her some thought-provoking questions to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it would be awesome if they could have that kind of a conversation. My guess is that it sounds like his heart's pretty hardened. He's pretty shut down. He might perceive any of that as just, you know, you're trying to judge me or you're attacking me. And so I would set my expectations accordingly. But absolutely, that it would be amazing if he would, you know, give some insight into what's really going on. And, you know, as you said, what would be some thought-provoking questions? I would really make my goal to truly try to understand what's going on for him and seek to understand and really try to, as best as you can, really experience what it's been like for him. And you might even ask something like, what has this marriage been like for you? And
that's good.
And just sit and listen. And again, and I get, man, this hard to have a great marriage. It takes two people. And it's an awful feeling when your spouse is not only not reciprocating, but actually is giving you stuff like, yeah, I just don't love you anymore. My heart has grown cold and hardened. And so, I mean, it's hard. And this is where God, you just have to be praying and begging for that strength. And you have to have the girlfriends in your life who are going to hold your arms up as you're exhausted and who will continue to encourage you. But I think anything like that, what has your experience been like inside of our marriage? And there might be some things that he's able to share that you really could go, wow. I'm going to sit with that, and I'm going to pray that through.
And really want to challenge you to keep putting your own oxygen mask on. Keep nurturing your faith so that your hope isn't in your husband, your hope is in God. As you just continue to get with God and say, remind me again who I am to you, because he's everything that your husband isn't, and he fills in the gaps where you fall short with your husband. And as you really kind of get your footing day in and day out in the Lord, if I were you, I would fast my guts out. I would fast and pray and do whatever I can do, not to manipulate, but to just, as Greg said, love him, encourage conversation. But I'd fight this thing on my knees. And I would go watch War Room, because that will help you fight and have a strategy to fight for your marriage. Thank you for your dear call. And we're going to get you a book of some kind, if you can give Grace your address. Greg, we've got another anonymous caller checking in with a question for you. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I didn't get to hear the last call because I was on hold, but did just hear, while on hold, heard part of your answer that really spoke to my heart. My situation is that I'm in a long-term marriage, 50-plus years.
Wow.
And in the first half of the day, our marriage is wonderful, but my husband is alcoholic, so by supper time, it's not so great. I am a devout Christian, and I do bottle all the things that would be contemptuous that I would want to say, but I know that that's not healthy either. And we've been through a couple of outpatient things, and it's good for a little while, and then Satan just knows the weak spots, and he's right back again.
So
you know, so I don't know how to deal with, I do feel contemptuous feelings. I get so angry internally, but I don't know how to handle it anymore.
I would struggle in the same way. That would be just because it feels like such a waste. What do you say, Greg?
Susie, how much time do we have?
We can take a later quarter hour break. So take 5 minutes if you need to.
Okay. Boy, just so sorry. Because, you know, part of what the challenge is that, as you're saying, the first half of the day, great marriage, 50-plus years, and then when the alcohol sets in, and it just everything changes. And you're right, that's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I mean, you can't do anything about that. I hear a couple things, though, that you're doing that's really encouraging, which is, you know, when when your husband is drinking and saying and doing things, it sounds like that you are really going to the Lord to seek out what is true about you. And so in the presence of whatever he's doing as he's drinking, boy, I just encourage you, really keep going to the Lord and, God, fill my brain right now with the truth of who I really am. But also, God, let me see the truth about who my husband really is. And Susie, when I know the kind of our final time, I'd love to talk about, I think the antidote to contempt is X-ray vision, as odd as that sounds. But it's this notion of being able to see through how our spouse is presenting at that moment. So whatever's going on, that we're able to look through that with X-ray vision to who they really truly are. And so my encouragement to you, and this is not a Pollyannish, this is not a let's cover the real deeper issue. The truth is that a part of how you fight contempt is that you really develop the lens to see through the irritating stuff in how he's presenting to God. Let me see my husband through your eyes. This is your son. This is a man who's been made into your image, who you sent your son to die for. Give me a picture and a vision of that. And that's just one way that we can really fight. I mean, obviously you have to set boundaries within the relationship. I mean, it could, you know, as he's drinking, I mean, there, you know, I don't know what that boundary is going to look like for you. But as you set that, rather that's that you're not going to be at home, that you're not going to be around. I don't know. I mean, there's probably way more, but I'm sure you've learned to set some boundaries. But in the midst of setting whatever boundaries you need to protect your heart, I think how we protect our mind is really start to learn how do we use an X-ray vision.
I love the idea, friend, of you maybe considering some fresh boundaries around when he starts drinking, what you can do to care for yourself. As Greg was talking, I was thinking of two things. Paul said, from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. So that really speaks to Greg's X-ray vision. Lord, give me a divine point of view. What do you see in my husband? I want to see into, you know, his story that you want to write. And then I was thinking of John, I think it's John 1:47. So Nathaniel was saying, can anything good come out of Nazareth? When one of the disciples said, come meet Jesus. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? But Jesus went, when he saw Nathaniel approaching, he said, here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. He knew Nathaniel had this kind of angst and attitude, but he saw past that into the character and the destiny of Nathaniel. And if God can give you that, he will give you, I think, the advantage to pray, to treat him, even with respect, you know, when it feels like he doesn't deserve it, with healthy boundaries around it, is, of course. But I love the idea. We have to pause here of getting X-ray vision and discerning what is God, what do you see? What are you saying? How should I pray? Because that's where you are going to be most powerful. But something jumped to me when Greg talked about boundaries, wondering if there's a fresh boundary you need to draw so you don't have to sit and watch him drink every night, so you can put your own oxygen mask on. Hope that encourages you. We're going to get you a book. So give Grace your address. We'll get you a book to encourage you. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how to extract contempt from your marriage and why it matters. Don't go away. More with Smalley when we come back. Line, you take our brokenness and you make us beautiful. When we get married, we're broken, and when we come together and we walk with Jesus, he makes something beautiful out of it. But we always got to be dealing with the stuff that comes up. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good buddy Dr. Greg Smalley about contempt in marriage. And we literally have, I don't know, 9 minutes left, and there's so much more I want to talk with you about, Greg. Like first symptoms that we can notice when contempt is kind of creeping its way. We need to talk about how to extract it from our marriage. But I got to squeeze in one more email. This listener writes, my husband and I have been married 3 years and are currently separated. Contempt is something that's definitely in our marriage. I hate to admit it, but it's mainly on my side. There's a history of infidelity, emotional and physical abuse on both sides. We're currently in marriage counseling and working through our differences. When Greg was describing contempt, he was describing me. What can I do to make this arrive better? I'm not sure what that means. And lose this feeling of contempt. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What say you?
You know, one of my very favorite stories in the Bible is Gideon. So remember the story of Gideon, mm-hmm. that Gideon was a very weak, kind of scared, fearful individual. God's allowing the Midianites to kind of attack the Israelites by consuming all their resources. So Gideon literally is up in the mountains hiding food, so because they're starving. When an angel appears and calls Gideon a mighty warrior, and it would have been so fun to watch the conversation, because you could only imagine this guy who thinks he's so weak in hearing the phrase mighty warrior, and he's pushing back and arguing, debating, but the angel of the Lord stands firm and keeps calling him mighty warrior, mighty warrior. And what I love about the story is that's X-ray vision. See, the angel ignored and saw through the arguing, the fear, the pushback, the debate that Gideon was doing, and continued to see what was true about him. What was true about Gideon is that he was a mighty warrior. He goes on to defeat the Midianites with just 300 men, like 135,000 of these Midianites. And that's X-ray vision, you know, Superman versus Batman, big movie. And that's what got me thinking about this, that X-ray vision is an ability to view a normally obstructed object with extreme clarity. Mm. In other words, sometimes you just have to see past things. It's a gift we give our spouse when we are able to see beyond the rough exterior, all those least attractive qualities, you know, the moodiness, the anger, the fear, the laziness, the complaining, the critical spirit, all that stuff, the withdrawal, that we're able to see beyond those things, and we see through them to who that person truly is. And what is true is that I believe with all my heart, at the very heart, the very core of who we are, is who God made us to be. We're made in His image. That there's, even if you're rolling your eyes right now and going, Smalley, shut up. You have no idea who I'm married to. I'm telling you, you're married to a prince or a princess of the Most High God. The Most High King, this is His son, His daughter, and He made every one of us fearfully and wonderfully. And we are God's treasured possession, Jesus' glorious inheritance. And so X-ray vision means that I'm, at times when Aaron is presenting in ways that it just frustrates the life out of me or bugs me, or I'm just looking at her like, you're not, what is going on? X-ray vision in that moment is looking through that to go, God, I want to see what you see. You don't look at the outward appearance. You look at the heart. What's true? What's the heart of my wife? In a part of then what we need to do is to get real clear about what is true about my wife. What's true about Aaron is that she's passionate, she's loyal, she's empathic, she's full of integrity, she's got such a deep faith, she's a mama bear, she will protect me and my children. It always. See, that's the stuff that's true, that I want to be able to look through when I'm seeing stuff I don't like, to focus on what is real about my wife. Mm. And that's, Susie, that's how you battle contempt. And I'm not trying to marginalize the pain of the hurtful stuff. I mean, we heard a caller whose husband's an alcoholic. I'm not trying to minimize and marginalize the real pain of our spouse's actions and behaviors and choices. I'm just saying that I can't change my wife, but what I can do is I can choose in those moments to say, God, give me a picture of who my wife really is. How do you see
Amen.
Her?
And I want to throw in, we got to also, if you're a Christian, you're a Christian first and a spouse second. And if you're a Christian, for unforgiveness is not an option. It is something that we are opted to do as we've been forgiven. And you know, a part of my story, when my hubby was a workaholic and I was holding him in contempt. This was about 17 years ago. And the Lord spoke to my heart and He said, I know he's missing it right now, but you've committed the greater sin. because you've let your love grow cold, and I want you to repent to me and to him. And that felt like so unfair because he was never around. And when I sat down and said, I need to ask your forgiveness because I made you a promise and I made God a promise to love you, and I've let my love grow cold, really that opened up my heart, but it opened up his too, and it was the beginning of healing. And Greg, I just don't think we can wrap this show up without talking about the personal responsibility of a Christian. No, really, I mean, I know there's healthy boundaries, there's wisdom in navigating some of these really tough issues, but as a Christian, when you get to a point where you're holding somebody else in full contempt, it's sinful, and we need to address that too.
Well, it is, and it has such a huge negative impact on us. We've all heard that sort of that quote that resentment is like drinking poison, expecting that it'll kill the other person.
Mm-hmm.
In unforgiveness, contempt, resentment, that's all affecting me. And you know, your caller who says my husband's an alcoholic, you know, her ability to begin to see what's true about him. It doesn't mean he's going to not drink anymore. So see, I'm not implying that. I can't help her to control him and what he chooses to do around alcohol. But what she is able to do is to say, you know what? Instead of allowing the contempt that's in my brain to poison my body and to make my heart grow hard, I can fight that. In one of the ways that you can fight this is by truly going, walk out Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, pure, lovely, you know, let your mind dwell on those things. And I'm telling you that even in those moments that my Aaron is so driving me nuts, I can look beyond that like the angel did and saw the mighty warrior in Gideon. I can look beyond that stuff that my wife is doing in that moment and see who she truly is. And that's how you battle contempt.
Hmm.
And that's what I can do. I can't, it may, sadly, that may never change how my spouse shows up or what she chooses to do. But again, you're right, Susie, we're not called to change the other person. We're called to renew our own mind.
Wow, it's been so good. We literally have 30 seconds here before we pray. Just say a word, if you can, about symptoms in your own heart. How do you know if there's seeds in your soil of contempt?
Yeah, it's when you have those extreme negative thoughts about your spouse. He will never do this. It'll always be like this. To me, that's the spiritual warfare that where Satan's attacking you, and that's the contempt that is there. Just hear how you think about your spouse and where your mind starts going, and those the voice that's replaying over and over and over again. That I'm telling you, that's the contempt, that's the warfare, that's the stuff that we can fight.
Wow, Greg, this has been fantastic. Would you pray? I mean, we've got these emails, we've got these calls. This is a common issue. Pray for that person who's on the receiving side of contempt, who's just feeling at a loss, and they feel their soul withering because they can't do anything right.
God, we pray, first and foremost, we can only do what we can do, which through you give us the ability, God, to really see through all that negative stuff to the heart of who our spouse really is, God. And so I pray for a renewal. I pray for a fresh lens. There are those sitting there right now who, God, you can touch their mind and really fill their brain with who this person truly is. And God, give us that lens, and we want to see the mighty warrior within. Give us that power, Lord. Thank you for how you can renew our mind. And we just ask these things in your precious name. Mm. Amen.
Amen. Greg, always, always good to talk with you. What a fantastic conversation. Thanks for sharing with us, and God bless you and your dear family.
Thank you as well.
Appreciate it.
Such a privilege being on with you.
Mm, such a good conversation. just telling a young woman that I mentor this morning that even our battles will pay us back and serve us well if we'll be trained by them. So if you're walking through a battle today, lean in, trust God, learn what you can, and in due time, that battle will serve you well. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Don't forget to sign up for the Writer's Contest. If you have a dream to write, now is your time. Go after it, okay? And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.